Welcome to this edition of Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. I'm your guest host for this episode, Dr. Doug Ray from Baltimore, Maryland, and today I'm speaking with Nick Rowan. Dr. Rowan is a sinus and skull-based surgeon. He's an associate professor at the Johns Hopkins Medical School. He's also the director of otolaryngology head and neck surgery at the Johns Hopkins Healthcare and Surgery Center at Green Spring Station. We're going to be discussing his recent publication, Olfactory Function, Caffeine Intake, and Mortality in a Nationally Representative Cohort. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Doug. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. So, you know, we go through and when we do our podcasts and we try to pick out something interesting, and I have to say that I found your article incredibly interesting and exciting because not a lot of people talk about caffeine and olfaction. And I know olfaction is something that's near and dear to your heart that gets you up out of bed in the morning and is interesting for you as a rhinologist. So I'm excited to talk about your paper.
Awesome. Me too. I've got strong feelings about both the sense of smell and caffeine. So feel free to ask me any questions you want.
I will. So what inspired your team and you to investigate the relationship between caffeine intake and olfactory function?
Well, to get started, again, as you mentioned, I'm pretty passionate about the sense of smell, and I've really been captivated for probably the past 15 years or so since I was a resident, when there was some really interesting studies that came about how the sense of smell is a single best predictor of your overall mortality and all these kind of really bad things that happen to us throughout the aging process. And over the past decade or so, I developed a portfolio of research along with a bunch of my mentors that have helped me kind of spearhead some of this research that smell loss isn't really just an inconvenience. It's a marker of our overall decline, our frailty, and bad things to come. And so we're always looking for modifiable factors to protect smell function, because right now, as we all know, as rhinologists, the toolkit for treating smell loss is pretty thin. We don't have a lot of great options. You know, there's some things that we can do to intervene, but there's nothing really out there yet that's super compelling. And meanwhile, caffeine is this thing where, again, about 15 years ago, there was these really sexy studies that came out. I think New England Journal papers that looked at caffeine and overall mortality, and says that for each cup of coffee, your mortality decreases, your lifespan increases until a certain point. And that's probably what I was thinking of is the smokers. If you're a chain smoker and you're drinking coffee, your mortality actually probably declines a little bit. But caffeine consumption has been associated with reduced cause mortality, lower rates of Parkinson's disease, type 2 diabetes, liver disease, and even cardiovascular events. And this has been reproducible across the literature. So we dove into the caffeine literature a bit and said, I wonder if there's any sort of attenuation between this relationship between olfaction and mortality and all of these bad age-related things that can happen to you and your coffee consumption. So that's the big question that we asked and where we started from. That's the genesis behind this anyways.
So Nick, you mentioned in your introductory comments, and I'm going to dive into this a little more, about the importance of olfactory dysfunction in terms of your overall mortality. Tell me a little bit about how and why olfactory dysfunction is being more recognized as an important public health issue.
Well, I think there's a few reasons. And first and foremost, I think it's important to recognize that a handful of years ago, we were in the midst of a pandemic where one of the single most important or pressing symptoms was smell loss. And so a lot of people are kind of clued in right now, but there's been a body of evidence that's been building for quite some time. And for it being a public health issue, well, first of all, it's a heck of a lot more common than most anybody realizes. Like 13-14% of people over the age of 40 have some sort of measurable olfactory dysfunction. And by the time you hit 80, about 2/3 of us have some degree of smell loss. And its prevalence, you know, climbs steeply with age. And as I was kind of alluding to, the consequences or the associations go well beyond just not being able to smell the flowers or enjoy your food. Smell loss is associated with depression, malnutrition, neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's. The loss of sense of smell oftentimes predates many of these bad things that are going to happen to you by years. And as I mentioned, it's associated with our mortality. And it's been shown to be a reliable predictor of our overall mortality. And people with normosmia have, even in this study, they have a 45% lower odds of mortality after the full adjustment for things that also cause smell loss, which is a pretty substantial effect. And really, the third reason why this is an important public health issue is that it's often invisible to clinicians. You know, as rhinologists and people listening to this podcast, we're probably aware of smell loss and some of the untoward associations with it. But most often, patients don't mention it. Doctors don't screen for it. If they do screen for it, they don't get paid for it. And so there's a little bit of a disincentive to do it. So we're missing this early warning sign. It's right in front of us. It's easily testable. And I think now is the time, especially when we have the public attention on the sense of smell, to really kind of take this opportunity that's in front of us to really pay attention to this important sensory function.
So Nick, prior studies on caffeine and smell have been somewhat conflicting. What was the gap in the literature that you were hoping to address with this study?
Well, the limited data that was out there was kind of all over the board. And the dosing was, you know, about 65 to 100 milligrams of caffeine. And so, Doug, I'm going to turn this around and ask you a question. What do you think the average caffeine of a Starbucks Grande coffee is?
I have no idea.
I think it's about 310 milligrams. And so, you know, that's threefold, fourfold higher than anything else that's been studied. And what do you think's real world? Well, you know that.
Well, I never get anything smaller than a venti.
Right. Exactly. I don't know that. I only looked up the caffeine concentration of a grande before this talk. So what we were hoping to really address is kind of bring some real world evidence and, you know, a little bit less in the laboratory and more across the population and at the population level, which is why we use such a large database in the NHANES.
Yeah. And so that leads me into my next question. Can you explain to the listeners a little bit about the NHANES database and why you're using it to study olfactory health?
Absolutely. So the NHANES is this wonderfully put together, nationally representative cross-sectional study that's run by the CDC. It combines in-person physical examination with super detailed dietary interviews, laboratory data, and a whole bunch of different testing. And it happens every couple of years in a nationally representative cohort, meaning that they screen a few thousand patients, done in a very thoughtful way that represents the entire population of the United States. In the years from 2011 to 2014, they asked about the sense of smell. In 2013 to 2014, they used a validated 8-item pocket smell test to actually get some good data on the sense of smell. Because as we all know, as humans, we're very, very poor at reporting our sense of smell, and we can't be trusted to actually tell you whether you're a good smeller or not. And the NHANES did this in a psychophysical way, which was really, really strong for this study. They did 24-hour dietary recalls that let us calculate caffeine intake. And then finally, the real clincher here is that the NHANES database is run longitudinally. It's done cross-sectionally, but it's run longitudinally. And so you can link the mortality data through the National Death Index to figure out overall mortality of these patients. So in one data set, you've got psychophysical smell testing, you've got somewhat quantified dietary caffeine intake, and you know who's going to live and who's going to die by looking at their survival data in thousands of adults. That's, again, nationally representative. That data doesn't exist really anywhere else. Some other studies are trying to do that, but this data from 2013 to 2014 are really, really impressive.
So how did you define olfactory dysfunction in your study?
Very, very simply, we use this 8-item pocket smell test. Again, it's a scratch and sniff test that many of us are used to, usually in a 40-item type capacity or a 12-item type capacity. And we used a blanket cutoff, and we had either people who had olfactory dysfunction or not. You can't really get too into the details of the degree of olfactory dysfunction with such a brief test. So if you failed three or more of the 8 cents, you were deemed and defined to have olfactory dysfunction or smell loss.
And then how did you categorize your caffeine intake into low, moderate, and high groups?
It was actually just based off the percentiles from the study population itself. So the 25th, 50th, and 75th percentiles. So low was what I would consider, you know, personally, I'll tell you about my own caffeine intake later, a micro dose, which is 30 milligrams a day. Moderate was anywhere, it was a pretty broad range from 30 to 220. And then high dose was above 220 milligrams.
I have to ask you, what's your average daily dose?
I don't know. I'm more like you, you know, with the venti. We got an espresso machine in the morning that makes a nice, really nice cup. And sometimes I put an extra espresso in it. So I make sure that I show up to work pretty revved up. I haven't measured the actual milligrams yet, though.
Yeah, I only do the dark roast large, and I probably have one and a half of those a day. So I drink coffee throughout the day, actually. I love an afternoon coffee. So anyways, so Nick, what covariates did you control for, and why were these important, do you think?
So as I mentioned before, the NHANES has a ton of great covariates and different variables that are in it. So we know that things like age, sex, race, income, education, smoking status, depression, history of getting whacked in the head or having some sort of facial trauma or having any sort of longstanding sinus related issues, like chronic infections, or in this database, they don't have surgeries, but if they had it, I would have corrected for it. But we corrected for all of those because each of those things are established risk factors for smell loss, and or they might be confounders for the caffeine kind of smell relationship. So as you know, males, we are generally worse at our sense of smell. Doug, you're a little bit older than me, so your sense of smell may be a little bit worse than mine, but maybe you drink more coffee, so maybe it's better. And then, you know, we know that people who are from higher socioeconomic status and who have higher degrees of education generally have better senses of smell, whereas smoking has the opposite effect. So we corrected for basically everything we could and adjusted for all of these.
All right. So this was a cross-sectional study. So what would you list as the key limitations of this, of your study?
Is understanding the mechanism. You know, we don't know what the biological mechanism is. We have some animal studies which show that there's a mechanism, but cross-sectional study is just an association. Does not suggest causality in the slightest. It just says that there's a relationship between the two. And so maybe we can double click on this a bit more in the future. But we have no idea what the, you know, whether this is causality or not, just that there's an association between the two.
As someone who's an expert on olfaction, if you were to guess, what do you think would be the proposed biological mechanism, or just throw something out there that you think could be?
Well, I think there's probably two different things that immediately come to mind. One is, you know, we wrote about it in the paper, and that in animal studies, caffeine is an antagonist to these adenosine receptors, which are in the olfactory bulb. So as caffeine blocks this receptor, it enhances the olfactory bulb excitability and signal processing, allowing it to work better. And so that's what the animal data shows us. For me, my thought is that it's caffeine and coffee in particular, and you can't really parse this out in the data, but perhaps has some sort of neuroprotective anti-inflammatory property, which allows you to live longer and is why we have these really cool epidemiologic studies suggesting that coffee consumption protects against things like cellular aging. And I think that's probably relevant too. So I think it's probably a mix between the two. Sure, maybe there's a mechanism between the adenosine receptors, but I think there's probably something special about coffee consumption as well.
So let's talk a little bit about your findings. What your headline finding was that obviously is that higher caffeine intake was associated with better olfactory performance. Can you just quickly summarize what that finding was for the listeners?
Yeah, sure. So dose-dependent relationship. So compared to low caffeine intake, moderate caffeine intake was associated with a 31% higher odds of normal smell, and high intake of caffeine with a 75% higher odds of improved sense of smell after adjusting for all those covariates. Similarly, when you do it as a continuous variable, when you look at caffeine quartiles, there's a 32% increased odds of having normal sense of smell for each quartile. So meaningful, consistent, statistically robust signal across these different methods. So low dose, worse smell, higher dose, better smell.
Do you think there's a threshold effect?
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you and I have 600 milligrams of caffeine a day, there's only so much your sense of smell could improve. So I think that there is a threshold at to some degree, but I think that curve, if we're on video right now, I'm showing you my hand kind of sloping up, but kind of flattening out pretty quickly at some point. Where exactly that is, I don't know. We need more data for that. But I do think that there's you hit the up curve, and then you flatten out at some point.
So now let's talk about, for us otolaryngologists, rhinologists, the clinical relevance of your study. Do you think clinicians, is there enough data here that clinicians should begin counseling patients differently regarding caffeine consumption and smell loss? And
no, I'd be super cautious about leaping to any sort of clinical recommendation from a simple cross-sectional study. I think the one thing you can kind of keep in your back pocket that you can probably use immediately is that if somebody is asking whether their morning coffee and going to Starbucks with their gold card is hurting their sense of smell, the answer based on this data seems to be clearly no. And in fact, there's actually maybe some benefits, but otherwise I wouldn't recommend changing any sort of clinical practice. I think it's a fun factoid at this point in time. I certainly would not recommend anything like prescribing caffeine, but maybe again, something to keep in mind when you're counseling patients in context of the broader conversation about lifestyle and olfactory health.
So if there was a study that you could design next along as a next step, what mm-hmm. would the study be for based on the findings that you have from this study?
Well, what I would love is that the NHANES hasn't measured the sense of smell since 2013 to 2014. So that's 12 years ago. What I would love is I just love the NHANES to do this again, or there's many other lovely studies that are out there that look at aging older adults. And I would love to see this done more longitudinally. I'd love to have an idea how the sense of smell changes, whether it's used to, whether it can be used to see how things kind of change over time and on a more nuanced scale. And as we're kind of alluding to, a single data point is not nearly enough to understand it. So you could do all kinds of fun things like dose somebody with caffeine, but I think the practicality of that is very challenging. So population level, to me, is the way you got to go. Get some good dietary evaluation or recall, and that would be a wonderful study to do.
We're going to have a little fun at the end here, Nick. We're going to do rapid fire closing questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. Coffee, tea, or Red Bull?
Coffee, of course. I think I'm professionally obligated to say that now, but that would have been true before the operation. My move, I know this is rapid fire, but my I love a cappuccino on a Friday morning. Man, that is the way to go. So, but coffee all the way.
All right. I figured that was going to be your answer. Next question. Most underestimated symptom in rhinology?
Well, the context of this podcast, it's smell loss, of course, without question. It affects more than your quality of life, and it tells you potentially how long you're going to live. The rest of the stuff, we got some of it figured out, like nasal blockage, and even polyps are going away now with the advent of biologics. But smell loss really remains, and it goes beyond the scope of rhinology.
One future innovation in olfactory research you're excited about?
Well, I think we're in an era of more information than we know what to do with. And I think there's some really compelling research on different regenerative approaches to the olfactory epithelium. And so whether we're delivering an agent to the olfactory epithelium, we're allowing for neuro regeneration. I've seen some really fun studies come out, mostly in the basic science labs. But I think that, similar to the improvement and the threshold effect I was kind of describing about caffeine and the sense of smell, I'm excited that once we break that barrier with neuroregenerative properties in the sense of smell. And I think there's some big companies working on this. And so I'm not anywhere smart enough to be involved in those conversations, but boy, oh boy, am I looking forward to hopefully using them in the future for my patients if those exist.
Agreed, 100%. What's one misconception that physicians, and it can be any physician, still have about smell dysfunction?
I would say, honestly, beyond physicians, it's the world, is that we think that sense of or smell loss is benign and untreatable. So why bother screening? There's nothing we can do about it. I think the mortality data alone should reframe that. And I'm a big proponent that older adults, as part of their annual wellness exam, should have smell tests. I think that'd be a really great thing to do. So it's this biomarker that we have that's really accessible, and we're systematically ignoring it.
And lastly, what's next for your research group?
So we're going to keep on studying the sense of smell in older adults. We're looking at it longitudinally, and we've started to really dig in on some of the interventional type work. You know, there's been some groups around the country that have looked at things like PRP injections, and there's other therapeutics that are coming out in the space. And again, the intervention space is something we're really looking forward to developing. And championing the mission to do some smell testing in older adults is a vital sign for the care of aging patients is near and dear to my heart, and something I hope to continue to put some substantial effort into.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for taking a little time at the end of your day to share your expertise with me and the listeners, and congratulations on a great paper.
Hey, Doug, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate you for having me here, IFAR, for publishing our work, and the great work that IFAR does supporting rhinologic research. So pleasure's all mine. Thanks so much.
And I'd like to end just to thank our Scope It Out listeners. This is Doug Ray for Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. Thanks for joining us today, and take care.